Hey gang, are you new to this podcast? Have you subscribed on iTunes or Stitcher and realize that you can only access the 20 most recent shows on these platforms? Do you want to binge on How Did I Get Here? Well, check out our archives available for free. Simply go to howdidigethere.podbean.com. Look on the right-hand column and all 463 shows are easily accessible by month and year. Go listen to such favorites as Bob Schneider, Wild Child, Ume, Quiet Company, and many, many more. Just go to howdidigethere.podbean.com and start listening. Let's get down.
And you may ask yourself, well, how did I get here?
It's time for How Did I Get Here? And now here is your host, John Howdy.
When we talked,
all right. Hello, I'm Johnny, I'm your host. Welcome to the show. I have a fantastic show for you guys today. Daniel Thomas Phipps from Daniel Thomas Phipps and the Kinfolk is in the house. We have a great conversation. He's not just a front man, guys. He's also a side man with Little Brave, Brandy Zidane, Sela, Ali Holder. He is currently playing with Emily Bell and the Talkbacks. He is a member of the Talkbacks. You can find him at thekinfolk.com. And you can find his album. He's got a great, 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 great full-length album that he put out called An Offering, which came out a couple years ago. Great songs. Amazing songwriter. Great dude. Great singer. Great hang. We had a great time talking, and I'm glad that we made friends. I got to tell you how we ended up making friends. Not only was he friendly when he was here, but when I was shutting down the machine and we were talking, I accidentally deleted the show, the whole conversation. But Daniel Thomas Phipps was cool enough to be like, hey, man, that's cool. Hey, don't worry about it. You know, I wasn't throwing a fit, but I was like, fuck, I can't believe I did that. I'm so sorry. And he was like, hey, man, don't worry about it. I'll just come back. And I was like, can you just come back tomorrow? Came back the next day. We had a conversation. Maybe I missed some stuff that we talked about the first day, because I was trying to keep it fresh and just let the conversation go in a direction that it would have gone. So basically what you're hearing is our second conversation, which is still fantastic. Daniel Thomas Phipps, a very, very talented songwriter, very, very talented musician, whether he's a front man or a side man, that dude is badass. Great guy to talk to, great hang. I want to thank him for coming twice. He was also a great sport. All right, before we get to this conversation with Daniel Thomas Phipps, let me tell you what's going on with me. I had quite an eventful weekend, all right? I played in San Antonio with Skyrocket on Friday at Sam's. That was unbelievable. Sold out show. We just played there 3 weeks ago, and they told us that it was the most pre-sales they've had for us yet, which is fantastic, man. The audience was amazing, and I hope that we gave them 110% back. We played a lot of love songs. We threw out Billy Joel, Just the Way You Are. And they loved it. They loved every second of the show. So I want to thank that audience there in San Antonio. You guys are an amazing audience, an inspiring audience, inspire us to play the very best shows we possibly can. Okay? So thank you. So I drove home from San Antonio after the show. Couldn't go to sleep very well. And had to get up early the next morning to drive to Houston and to the Woodlands for my aunt's 60th birthday, my Aunt Christina's 60th birthday. So Zuri and I get up Saturday morning. I slept about 3.5 hours. It was very difficult. Jump in the car, go get some coffees, head out of town. Long drive, get there, do the party, great party. Family in great shape. Her children threw her birthday party, my cousins Eric and Jennifer, and Tessa and Ryan, and they were amazing. We had grilled cheese bar. It's a great time. You created your own grilled cheese, and someone made it for you in a panini. And they had a photo booth where you put on the funny glasses or the mustache or the bow tie or whatever. Very fun. Very, very fun time. When I have some of those pictures, and they are appropriate, I will post them on our How Did I Get Here Facebook page, which you should like while you're out there. Like it, like it, like it. Anyway, so then Zuri and I drove back that same day. So about 4:30 or 5, jump back in the car, drive back very hard. It was a tough ride back. Last hour was really rough. We were both shifting in our seats a lot. Like, I couldn't find anything cool to listen to. We were out of the 4G range, so we couldn't listen to any Spotify or any, podcasts or anything. So it was a little bit annoying, a little weird. So we finally made it back. Chilled out, Watched a bit of the debates, which I must say was just terrible. Gross. I don't like it. Anyway, did that. Fell asleep early. Woke up the next morning, which was Sunday, Valentine's Day morning. About 7:30 I woke up, and I thought to myself, you know, the night before, I was like, well, I didn't do anything for Valentine's. Zuri and I said, hey, man, you know, we won't get anything for Valentine's. Won't be a big deal. But obviously, you got to get up and get your lady a little something for Valentine's, even if it's going to the store, get her some flowers, some candies, a card, something. All right? So I get up at 7:30, hit the store, thinking that I'm going to be the only person in this HEB at 7:45 in the morning on Valentine's Day morning. No, my friend, this place was packed with nothing but dudes doing the Valentine's Day shuffle. Tons and tons of men walking around with a card, flowers, candies, a stuffed animal. The aisles looked like Beirut, like the Valentine's aisles, like the candy aisles. Oh, girls just ravaged, looted, if you will. The card aisle was, the only thing they really had was like father-son Valentine's. And then I did find a love Valentine. Anyway, it was tough, man. It was very tough, but it was very funny seeing all those guys doing the Valentine's Day shuffle, half zombie-eyed, but a little bit worried, like, oh shit, did I wait too late? There was a line of about 40 people. There was a line of about 40 people waiting to have these people dip these strawberries in chocolate and stuff. And listen, man, those people that were doing it, those people were not clean, man. I'm glad they were wearing gloves, but I would have never gotten those hand-dipped chocolates because they were freaky, people that might not have showered that week, okay? Anyway, so yeah, did that. Valentine's, Zuri loved it. I ended up getting a card, flowers, and chocolates, that combo. I don't think I looked worried. I think I was the only guy that was kind of laughing at the whole thing. Like, I can't believe that this is our world. Anyway, so I did that. And she gave me some beautiful bracelets, which I really enjoyed, and a nice card. And she let me eat some of the chocolates I got her, which makes her even better. And then, check this out. We watched Vinyl last night. Finally premiered on HBO. I got to tell you, in our circle of people, I'm sure the people that listen to this show, you guys, the listeners, were very interested in this new Martin Scorsese, Mick Jagger production of a show about the 70s music scene in New York City. Very exciting show. I really liked it. It was directed by Martin Scorsese, which was really cool. So I suggest that I'm sure you heard of it by now, but it's out. And I don't know if you knew it was out because maybe you were out doing Valentine's Day shit with your person. Your significant other, but check it out, Vinyl on HBO. If you have HBO, HBO Go, whatever, Vinyl, great show, 2-hour premiere. All right, let's talk to Daniel Thomas Phipps. He's a fantastic dude. You can find him at thekinfolk.com. You can find him at Bandcamp, Facebook, Twitter. You can find him playing with Emily Bell on the Talkbacks as well. So check it out. He's a great guy. I want to thank him for coming by twice, for putting up with my incompetence, and enjoy my conversation with my new friend, Daniel Thomas Phipps. Have a great week. Let's get down.
Was it funny seeing me in a store with a wine and a floor and a girl surrounding in a white shirt revealing a lesser, larger man, you see?
You know, at one point he was going to do the show. I remember talking to him one time at the W. And he was like, he seemed like a guy that didn't like to do this kind of stuff. There's some guys that are like that. I don't know why you wouldn't. It's super fun.
It is a lot of fun. He might. He's just private.
Yeah.
Private dude. But that's his deal.
Daniel, I have to start this off by apologizing for yesterday when I was turning off the machine for the second time of actually turning off the machine. deleted a podcast with you, and you were gracious enough to come back the next day.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
I don't got nothing to do. But no, it's really okay.
It's in the time of day when guys that do what we do can do what we do. That's right. How this works. Like, I'm still a musician. Mm-hmm. I still got to go to rehearsals and play gigs and stuff. But during the day, I can...
Yeah.
I could either watch episodes of SVU on Hulu, or I could do this.
Right. And this is more productive.
it gives me the illusion of being more productive, but I'm actually just hanging out with my friends shooting the shit. Anyway, I want to thank you for being gracious and coming back.
Of course, thank you for having me again.
Tell me a little bit about what you're up to these days, because yesterday when we talked, we went out, you're playing guitar with Emily Bell in the Talkbacks.
Mm-hmm. Playing bass.
Playing bass, sorry.
No, that's
and,
fine.
And you're also playing with your own band and doing solo shows.
Mm-hmm.
And is there anyone else you're playing with right now?
Emily Bell. This guy named Kay Phillips. He lives in Nashville, but we still get together probably twice a month. He comes to Dallas. Brandy Zidane is coming to town this week
from
Nashville,
right.
And I'm playing bass in her band. And I play bass with Allie Holder sometimes, or guitar. We do like duo shows. And Little Brave every now and then. She's got her like one woman thing, so she hasn't really needed me around. But I used to play. That's where I started playing bass, was in her band. She was like, "Hey, I need a bass player. Can you play bass?" And I was like, "I never have, but I'll try." And that's where it started.
When you started playing, did you take to it?
I think so. I mean, it was just, you know, I was like, I'm not a bass player stuff, but the parts are there. So I just went and learned the parts.
Yeah.
And then that sort of like unlocked
that sensibility,
that like listening where you're now. You might have let that part go of like recordings that you love, but then you start to hear like where to put notes, like with the kick drum, or, you know, stay out of it when the kick isn't there. You know, just like little choices that you have to make as a bass player, like, slowly came to me, and I think I got a good idea of how to do it now.
It's interesting what you can do. Like, a band can be playing and you can be doing things with a bass. You have all these choices. You have these, like, All My Loving by the Beatles, you know, a real walking bass line, mm-hmm. that's just constantly moving.
Yeah.
Or you have these, you know, bass lines that have real space in them.
Yeah, yeah.
That can really change the feel of the song completely.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And that's why I love playing the bass. It's great. It almost shapes the song more than, you know, the main guitar melody, too, you know, sometimes.
There is that horrible thing, though, that, like, you are not afforded the luxury of being able to mess up on the instrument.
No, you're not.
Because...
if when you clam it, it's like... Meow.
Yeah. Sounds like something's gone wrong.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you could probably play a wrong note on the guitar or piano, and it's a little... Everybody's a little bit more forgiving than when, you know, if I mess up, everybody turns and looks at me.
Yeah.
So...
It's funny, because the bass players... did you play with really great bass players coming up?
I think so. I mean, just in high school, like, had some.
All right, let's go back to this because.
Oh yeah.
To keep this fresh, I kind of try and go in a different direction.
For sure.
But I loved the jam band.
Yeah, we had
stuff. That's what you had. That was your first band, right?
Sort of. I mean, like, the first band we had, like, you know, it was even funny because I'd started listening to like Jimi Hendrix like back in sixth or seventh grade. And like Little Feet and stuff like that, and falling in love with the guitar. Like, I played piano, and I was in the school band. I played the clarinet, which is embarrassing, but it was a good, you know.
I tried to play the clarinet.
Foray into music, yeah. I wanted to do something cool, like play the drums or the saxophone or the trumpet. But my first band director or whatever was like, "No, you have the mouth for a clarinet. That's what you're gonna play." I was like, "Fine."
He said, "You have that." That sounds like, in this day and age, that guy would go to prison.
Well, I mean,
for saying
I
that
mean,
to a
it
child.
Was, no, it
you
actually.
Have, you have the mouth. For well, a clarinet,
it's called, I guess, embouchure, I suppose, is like the proper term.
Oh,
like,
okay.
I just. Because okay. They brought us in, they were like, if you want to be in the band, come and try some stuff out. You know, there'll be some instruments there. And so, like, you know, you'd pick up the trumpet and try and make a sound. You'd pick up the flute, try and make a sound. And you'd do all this stuff.
That's interesting.
It ended up just being that I didn't want to do it, you know, but it was obvious to the director that was like, you can play this, like, you can do, your mouth is such a way that it is conducive to this instrument. Like, so I was like, okay, fine.
You know how my guy did it?
What?
I moved to Miami and kind of like my mom died. I lived here and my mom died. I moved to Miami, lived with my dad. I was in high school and I had to go to this all boys Catholic school. It totally sucked.
Oh my goodness.
And so. This is not a lie. You Belong to the City was a hit. It's a Glenn Frey song.
Yeah.
May you rest in peace. Big sax part. what I'm saying? So I go to the band thing, and the guy's like, all right, well, do you play any instruments? So I tell him the instrument is like guitar. No, yeah, that's not going to work in here. Is there any instrument like you're interested in other than that? Like, I was like, saxophone? Because yeah, yeah. That song, like that moment, like I was in the 80s, just kind of in general. Yeah, I'll take a saxophone. And then it was because he's like, no, saxophones are all gone, but we have got a clarinet space.
Mm-hmm.
And a clarinet, I guess. And then I just went into a room and tried to learn it. He didn't even know what he even taught me. He just gave me this book. I had an understanding enough of music where he figured, well, you can just figure this out. And never really, I don't even remember what he looked like.
That's very interesting.
Yeah, I never, there was no accountability at all. Yeah. He just gave me an A, and I never talked to him. I just kind of went in this room, would listen to music on my Walkman, try and figure shit out on the saxophone, but really not.
Man, that's really interesting. That's a super, I think, progressive way of leading a band. Because most of these band directors I know they were very intense.
I think it's because I came in the middle of shit. Year had already started. So it was just kind of like if this guy's mom died just now. I was like, oh God, yikes. Just like keep this guy. Like give him his place.
Yeah.
Dude, you want a fucking hour a day? You can just sit in a room and I will not ask you any questions about what you do. And I'm just like, yeah, sure.
Yeah. Well, that's really nice of him.
Yeah.
As an educator.
So, but yeah. So you're playing clarinet.
Yeah. Well, and all that stuff. And then I made friends with my buddy Zach Hunt. And we both were like really into music and like talking. And he was like, hey, Phipps, guess what? I'm going to get a bass. You get a guitar. We're going to start a band. And so it took me a little bit of time because I was super embarrassed about it. Because like my mom was like trying to groom these kids that were like, you know, had these Christian values and all this stuff, like in religion. And like my dad, you know, agreed with it. But I mean, he was like rock and rolling. You know, we'd drive around, and that's where I would listen to rock and roll. And
but you didn't listen in the house.
Not really. I mean, he would put on Bruce Springsteen and stuff, and like, you know, Taiwan on.
Did your mom get like she wasn't?
Well,
into it,
you know, I just as a kid, I was, you know, I just wanted to please my parents and make them feel okay about who I was, and so I didn't want to really let that part of my love of rock and roll to my mom and my because I figured they were going to be like, no, this is crazy. You're going to end up in jail, which is everything that they thought the worst of has happened. It's true. But they were really sweet and like got me a Squire guitar. And then we just started playing. And then my other buddies got some guitars and we just kind of started learning like Pink Floyd songs and some Sublime stuff and, you know, Green Day and stuff that we dug. And then I started writing eventually. I was just like, I have to try to do this because I don't want to play these other songs for the rest of my life. Like, that's not how you do it, right?
Yeah.
Just kind of growing up, like, yeah, these guys were good bass players. Like, Zach is a great, really great bass player. I played with this guy named Jake Rutherford. He was a really great bass player. And we just sort of, like, learned how to do it, you know, together throughout the years, and we had that jam band and stuff.
When you had the jam band, was that original music?
Yeah.
Okay, that you guys just all came up with. And what was that? You guys just all got in a room and just went like, E, let's go.
Kind of. I mean, we would all, I mean, during the week, you know, because I was writing and, you know, and I was coming up with like melodies and stuff. And so we would just kind of come back.
Did anybody have any like deep musical pockets?
What do you mean? Like a,
it's a, you know, some history. Because, you know, to go in and just jam.
Yeah,
have a little bit of a foundation before you go in and just start jamming, or it's terrible.
Right. Well, we would rehearse pretty much all weekend. You know, we would get together on Saturday. I mean, and most of our rehearsals, sometimes we would just sit around and listen to music that we liked to kind of get that idea to build those pockets. You know, to line your pockets with some musical ideas. And so that was really fun because.
But like while a band like The Dead was inspired by jazz guys doing that, were you guys inspired by the jazz guys or were you guys inspired by like The Dead or the Fish?
We wanted to be jazz guys. We really respected that music, but it was pretty clear that we didn't have the technical knowledge of an instrument to pull that off. Yeah. And stuff like, you know, Fish, even though while Trey Anastasio's stuff is like, you know, everything off that Junta record is like composed. There's nothing.
Sure.
Not deliberate about. I'm sure there's some sections where he just improvised, but a lot of it, you know, and we couldn't do that. And so there was some more simpler stuff, you know, like Fire in the Mountain, that we kind of were like, oh, it's just two chords. Like, and you can do that and groove on it. And just, and so we kind of did stuff like, you know, three chord jams, and but some more like complicated stuff that we enjoyed, that we would trip people out on and piss people off, because they were just like, your songs are too long and there's no chorus and it's weird.
Was it mostly dudes that liked you?
Nobody liked us. We got girlfriends just because they were kind of, it was sort of, you know, we were like weirdos. But no, we had some fans, but it was mostly just kind of like, you know, trying to get your friends to come to these shows. You're like, yeah, come see my show. And they're like, I heard about your band, dude. Like, it's not something, you know, we dig, but I'll come to it to support you at some level. But as soon as they would get there, they would just kind of would sigh and roll their eyes, because it's sort of, it was sort of self-indulgent stuff, you know, because we were just sort of like, well, screw everybody, like, this is art, you know, we're doing it.
Were you guys, what was the venue? Was it like someone's house, or was it like a club, or was
we played at Lucy's on the Square a lot.
Oh, that upstairs place?
Mm-hmm.
I played up there.
Yeah, we did some really cool shows there, and then there was this place in New Braunfels called the New Braunfels Museum of Art and Music, and they would have these kind of rotating exhibits come through, and they had a big stage, and they'd let us get on stage there, and then, you know, like, yeah, like parties and stuff, or you'd invite your friends over for rehearsal and just kind of jam around, and the vibe we ended up playing.
Right.
We played the Vibe. That was like as soon as we got that gig, we were like, Sixth Street, we're being Austin. Like, we were super excited, because that was the goal. We were like, we got to play in Austin. Like, we have to. Like, we can't be doing this San Antonio, New Braunfels honky tonk stuff, because we're this vibing jam band, sort of, or whatever.
Did you have to play like metal places in San Antonio?
Yeah, and that was always scary. And I can't even remember the names of those joints.
I can't either. I really can't. But I know they had black walls and like photos of Thrice on the wall, mm-hmm. and stuff like that.
And you're like, yeah, this is not our scene.
I still never have even heard Thrice, but it's like a, I know it's a genre of music that I know. I can tell by their font.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah, Allie and I
can tell by the name.
Allie and I did a show at the Nick in
Birmingham.
In Birmingham.
Love that place.
It's super cool.
Hey, there's pictures of guys that you know from here.
On that,
all
on that.
From with hair down to here, like you.
Yeah, there's
a picture of me. I'm there.
Oh, no joke. Well, yeah, I'll have to go back and look. But we got there and we were supposed to headline, but the other band on the bill was named Banshee, and we were like, no. And we got into the club and like looked on the stage, and it's like two kick drums and Marshall stacks and vocals and and all this stuff, and they were like, oh yeah, you're playing last, and we were like, no, we're not. Like, we were two acoustic folk people. Like, it's not gonna
go. There's nothing worse than that.
It's not gonna go over.
Yeah.
So we did end up opening. They, you know, and then listened to like 30 minutes of Baby Dio and then left. It was, excuse me, Banshee, y'all are awesome.
Baby Dio. That's a good name for a band.
It was sort of like Baby Dio.
Is that a real band, or is that just a description of music?
That, you know, like they were doing this Dio thing, but you know.
Are you a Dio guy?
I love Dio.
Me too.
Yeah. I like a lot of stuff.
I like him. Hey, so real quick, the Nick, man, that place is never going away, man. I think I played that place in like, maybe I played it the first time in 1990 or 1993, one of those times. But nice. It doesn't go, last time I played was like, I want to say like 2000 and something. I don't know, but yeah. I played there the whole time.
Every time you go to Birmingham, you
play I've there? Never played another place, I don't think.
Mm. Yeah, I'd love to go back. There, man. I haven't been back. I think we made like a decision not to go back after that experience. Because obviously there was some lapse in judgment between whoever was booking the show that decided to put these two folk kids on the show with the metal band. And yeah. So we were like, and I don't think we got paid. I think it was sort of like a door deal, and we didn't know anybody in town. So it's, I mean, we were going out and doing these shows with like not a lot of preparation or promotion, but I mean, people would walk in and, you know, as long as they had a built-in crowd, like somebody would come up and be like, oh, hey, that was cool. Where can we find y'all again? And stuff like that. But I think we just were like, oh, let's not try to play there again. But I would love to go and do it. I think it would be cool.
I think in the two decades, I have no recollection of payment. Not that I didn't get paid for playing there, but I just have no recollection of
maybe
who the guy is that owns it. I don't have any.
Yeah.
I know the current bartender.
Yeah. Yeah.
From soundcheck.
Yeah.
And then there's a really old picture of me on the wall and all my friends.
That's awesome. I'm going to have to go back and find it, send it to you. Or you can go and do it and send it to me.
We can all go do it.
Yeah.
Anyway, okay, so you guys toured around a lot in the Southeast, huh? Did you do that too? Do you do that on your own?
I haven't yet. I've been working on getting that together. I think I'm going to do some shows next month with through the Southeast with the Los Lonely Boys.
Really?
Yeah. That's the big gig coming up.
Look at that.
I know. It's pretty surprising.
Are you doing a band? Or are you doing solo?
Yeah, I'm going to have a band.
Okay.
I'm going to bring these guys. I think I've been talking to some preliminary guys, you know, and I think Bird Dog is going to come with me. And they're this great rock and roll band from New Braunfels. We've been friends for years.
Oh, that's cool.
And but now we all play together. They play drums and bass in my band, and it's just like super stripped down song. Like the songs are just end up super stripped down in rock and roll. It's really, really fun.
Nice.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's go back to high school. So when you decided to leave, you decided that you wanted to bring in fully written songs to the band, and they weren't.
Well, yeah, I had been doing that, and then we were also producing these, you know, pretty much solely instrumental tunes all together, you know, getting in and being like, I have this idea, and then sort of like, oh, this is where we can go with it, and trying to write a song that way. And it was a lot easier. Oh, yeah, I mean, I think we did end up writing, because Clint, the drummer, is this fantastic poet, and so he would give me lyrics, or he would give me these lines that he would write. He's like, hey, I wrote this, like, try and sing it. And then I could take it and be like, well, this doesn't really work here with the thing. And we would change it around. But yeah, I was writing these songs like by myself, and they eventually kind of came to me because they were getting sort of sappy and a little bit more songwritery. And they were like, hey, we don't really want to play these anymore. Is that cool? I was like, yeah, it's totally fine. Like, we're still playing in a band. Like, that's fine. But I am going to go and do this on my own. Is that cool with you guys? And they were like, yeah, that's fine. And so, like, I had this acoustic guitar and some loop pedals, and I would go around to the open mics and play my sad songs, my sad boy songs.
What would you do the loop? Would you have stuff already on there? Or would you make the loops?
No, it's
while
you're I had two DL4s.
What made you? Who?
I guess that Howie Day guy. I saw him do that stuff, and I saw his whole rig, and so I just started picking up gear that was exactly like his, and building these songs. On stage.
I've seen some people do it where it's great, and I've seen some people do it where
it can go left really fast.
It is not cool in any way.
Right.
To spend 4 minutes getting into a 3 minute song.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's like the half of the battle is like rehearsing enough with it to get it going quick.
Have you ever seen Steve Poltz?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Have you ever seen how he uses it, like, mm-hmm. just on three songs? But it is a big fucking deal when he does it.
Yeah, you don't have to do it every time.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. You don't have to do it every time. And I don't think I did do it every time. Because I realized slowly, I was like, it's taking me a really long time to get into these tunes, and people are bored. I can tell people are bored.
Yeah.
And so I stopped doing that. And then they fell out of a truck. So
right.
So I had to make a conscious... It was great, because... I was really bummed because it was like a lot of money that I lost, and I really liked what I was doing, but it forced me to learn how to play without that crutch, you know, to let this...
Make sure that you wrote better songs.
And also, from the writing standpoint, like I didn't have this like thing that I was writing from through, I suppose, that I had to be like, oh, these songs have to stand on their own now.
Right.
Without any... sort of embellishment, you know, and that blah blah blah.
Yeah. So you were living in New Braunfels when you lost all those?
I was living in Sherman.
In Sherman. That's where you went to college.
Yeah. I went to this Austin college.
Why there?
Cause they had a swim team. I swam in high, like all my whole life. I've been a swimmer.
Were you good?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's kind of like a point of pride, sort of. It's like glory days at this point, you know. But yeah, I was pretty good. I thought I was pretty good.
It's just, it's a funnier video if Bruce Springsteen hadn't had the baseball thing. They all would have just been all Speedos. Like in Speedos.
I'm going to do a cover. I'm going to do a cover now of Glory Days.
And a shot for shot video, but everyone's in there.
It's just speed, like dudes in Speedos dancing around. Oh, man, that'll be hilarious. Yeah, they had a swim team, and I had, and they let me in. It was like one of the only places that let me in. I guess I applied to UT, and they were like, "Oh, you can come here, but you got to come for the summer." And I was like, "Nope." And Texas State let me in, but I was like, "I don't really want to go there." And
you wanted to go further.
I also did want to get away from from here. Sherman isn't like a mecca of.
How far is that from Dallas?
It's 45 minutes north of Dallas.
That's summer.
Right. Well. Not really. There's still a pretty good stretch of time between the two. But 20 minutes from the Oklahoma border, too. So, like, you know, Sherman was great. Like, all the kids that, you know, there were a lot of Dallas kids, but also, like, a lot of people from out of state and kids from Austin, you know. So it had a cool vibe, and it was a liberal arts school, and it was really small.
Okay.
And
what'd you major in?
English literature.
That's cool.
Yeah, it was fun.
Did you graduate?
Mm-hmm.
I'm cool.
Yeah, 4 years. I was so tired of it. So tired of academia.
So did you play when you were up there? Or did you get out and play in Dallas and stuff?
Yeah, I went down. I played the door. I played some, like, strange wine bars that, like, booked me.
For what, like, the, you know, 2 to 3 hour?
Yeah.
Sit in the corner.
Sit in the corner, play songs.
Hey, man, you know, there was a point where I was in between things and bands and kind of like life stuff. I got divorced and stuff, and I had a friend that was booking like all the El Arroyos.
Okay.
And I played
like the chain Mexican.
Yeah, but they used to do this thing in like the early 2000s where you'd go and play fucking 6 to 9, like three sets, 3 45-minute sets, and you know, it was,
I bet it paid.
It's like 200.
Yeah.
It's not bad by yourself, and do a few of those a week.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, for sure.
They also allow you to go out and play other gigs later on that night with your band or
something. Yeah, because 6 to 9, you can still make it 10 o'clock or an 11.
Yeah. Sorry. Anyway.
Yeah, no. I'd play in Dallas. I'd play in Sherman. I'd play in Denison. I played up in Oklahoma, like South Oklahoma and some spots. Gainesville. I think I did Denton. I think I did.
And you were just doing by yourself? Did you have an album and stuff that you made?
I did have like this little thing that I recorded like at a friend's house, like my senior year in high school. I got it done. And then the year I went to school and I was like writing the whole time, and I came home that summer and I recorded like another little thing in that room.
What do you mean like a little thing, like an acoustic album?
An EP. It was basically just like me sitting down playing the guitar part as best I could without singing, and then singing, and then putting bass on it, and then putting other stuff, and like getting a drummer to like come by and just sit there and like bounce it out.
Okay.
And so it had arrangement, but there were some songs that were just sort of, you know, I think the first one even had like a djembe loop from GarageBand that I used, because or I would just play the djembe on the stuff. I think the second one I played a lot of djembe, but some of the songs needed trap kit, so I let this guy.
How would you record the tunes when you were up in Sherman, just on your
little M-Audio interface and some microphones. I would either use the 58 or I eventually got into the film program, like some film classes, and I had access to like their shotgun mics, and those things sound awesome.
Oh yeah.
And I would record with those, or just friends stuff, like some other people that I knew had some microphones that I could use. But yeah, I did a lot of that, and we started a band with some dudes. We called it the Seeing Machine. It was pretty cool, because I was playing, me and this guy Kyle Tunnel, he was a piano player, and so we would sit down and write these songs, and you know, the way you kind of write a song on guitar, I'm sure you write a certain song on guitar,
right?
But like, you know, with the whole keyboard
Right, out. You're right. A different.
It can just. It's like the where he could take the, where he could take everything was just wild.
Yeah,
it was super cool. We wrote like 5 or 6 songs and played some shows. And then we lost like that battle of bands thing at the end of the year one time because I said the word fuck on stage.
Wait, what was the battle of the bands on campus?
Yeah, they did this like spring festival thing, and they would bring in a band like our freshman year.
Oh, Bob Schneider.
Bob Schneider played, right, okay. and I won that thing. I got to open for Bob. That was cool. And then the next year
did you get laid?
When did
you
I
open for Bob the first time?
I probably did.
Really?
I think I did. Probably. I was, yeah.
Were you sold? Were you like, yeah, this is a good thing?
What do you mean? I'm lost now.
Like, did you, I mean, was it exciting? Like that part, like.
Opening for Bob?
No, I mean, like the attention you get from ladies at a certain age when you are like, every boy, all they want is attention from ladies. And all of a sudden you find this way to be like the center of attention for everyone. And then you enjoy those times.
I think I enjoy those times.
Yeah.
I mean, it's nice.
When you're
it's
young. Nice. I mean, it's a nice...
Yeah,
you're
young and it's...
You're a kid and you're, you know...
You're getting, you know, affection for nothing, basically. You really don't have to do any charming other than...
Play, not be an asshole. Play,
not be a jerk.
Yeah.
Which you usually are. Yeah. But they're sort of, you know, this is rude. I don't know. They're sort of like blinded by your... ability to do this dumb thing.
But I mean, that's totally an allure because there's a certain age that we go into it, and part of it is we have these you know, when you're young you kind of have these operatic emotions which make you want to express all these feelings.
Mm-hmm.
So you're prone to sort of be, if you're a creative person and you have these incredible feelings, then you're making this really emotional art, right?
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah,
coupled
yeah.
with the fact that your hormones are raging,
mm-hmm.
and every guy at that age, like all they're thinking about all the time is just sex and girls and sex and girls, and then all of a sudden you're kind of given this magic key. It's pretty exciting.
It is. It was very exciting.
So, anyway. So you opened for Bob, but then later on in the year, you guys lost the Battle of the Bands.
Yeah, this was like, I guess our junior year, we started this band, and it was a super cool band. I really, really enjoyed it. We played a couple of shows.
And what was your songs? And
It was me and Kyle.
Right, the piano guy.
We would sit down and write these songs.
Okay, together.
And then I had like one song that I already knew that I wanted to play that I had written. So we had written like 3 or 4 songs, and then... I can't remember what else we did. I can't remember if we did a cover or not. But yeah, they were really, it was like really fun. It was a really cool band. And, but yeah, and then I ended up saying fuck on stage, and immediately, like, cause it's a Presbyterian school. They were like, nope, you're out. And then everybody got mad at me. And then we like stopped playing.
That ended the band.
Yeah. That ended the band. The loss. The loss of the Battle of the Bands. Because we were, you know, I mean, not to be like...
Come on.
Not to be like, I don't know, high and mighty, but like we were the obvious choice.
Obvious choice.
You know, because yeah. Like, the band was really cool. Like the songs were really cool. Like we did really well.
What was the style of music at the time?
Like, the style?
What was your genre? What band would you compare yourself to?
I don't know. We were listening to a lot of Elliott Smith and a lot of Radiohead, and like Neutromilk Hotel was it Grizzly Bear or Panda Bear? You know, a lot of like that indie stuff, you know, that we were listening to in college. And so we were trying to, you know, make these interesting, you know, compelling tunes in that way that are strange.
Right.
They're strange songs, but you know.
Have you seen this Elliott Smith documentary?
I haven't. Okay. I really need. Well, I want to watch it now. I didn't. What is it called? It's called. I've seen it.
No Name. Or,
yeah, you know, yeah. I know what it's. Like yeah.
I don't know. I heard just now before you came here, my friend Corey called to ask me a keyboard question, and he was like, "Oh, I rented this movie the other night, and I'm in the end." I did one of those benefits, and they pan across, and I'm there in it.
That's awesome.
Yeah, when it came out in the theater, or whatever in special release in LA and New York, I would have all these friends that would text me and be like, dude, you're in this movie.
That's awesome.
And I'm
dude.
Like, at what capacity am I like in the movie? And they're like, oh, no. You're not like in the movie, but if you know you, you're like, oh,
yeah, of course. Yeah. No, I mean, that's super cool.
It was a really great benefit for him here where all kinds of people play. It was great.
When was that?
2013.
Yeah, I saw the poster for that, but I don't think I can make it. I didn't make it. It's a bummer.
There's a lot of cool. I mean, it was cool. Like Ben Queller, Susanna Schaffel, Nakia.
Yeah.
Amy Cook.
I love those guys.
Davi Garza.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to think. There's a lot of people there. Oh, Dana Falconberry.
Yeah.
Great time.
Dana's awesome.
She's awesome.
That's a bunch of great guys.
That's where I met her and got to know her.
Cool.
Anyway, she's cool.
Yeah, she is. Right? She is really cool.
Do you know her?
I got to hang out with her a little bit at the Folk Alliance last year.
You talked about that. It was a party.
I just sort of treated it like a party. Well, just like a week long. I guess my whole life is like a week long party anyway.
Who's attending the Folk Alliance that is not playing?
That is not playing mm-hmm. music.
Yep, you hear it.
There are people, like, fans? Like, there are music fans that go.
Okay.
Is that what you mean?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, there are music fans that go.
Industry?
I think there is, like, a limited capacity of industry. I have a funny story about that. that go. Because there is this big thing that's like one of the centerpieces of the conference. It's called like the radio DJ mixer. And there's just a bunch of folk radio DJs that are there. And you just kind of are like rubbing elbows with people and trying to be like, here's my card. Here's my CD, please. Blah, 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 like listen to this. And so, yeah. I never went to it. But yeah. And then, you know, like I had some friends of mine that are from San Antonio. Like one is a photographer. He had seen that we had been going and kind of saw, and he's a music fan and he takes pretty much just exclusively photography, like show photography. Like that's all he does. And so he came and just as a fan and as a photographer, I think he got like some credentials, like photo credentials to like move around and take pictures and stuff. And then a buddy of mine, who's also a musician and a writer, he decided to just have a room and book the room. And then there's also another buddy of mine named Bucky. He lives in Bryan College Station and he's just sort of like a promoter booker. So he got his own room too.
And in that room, he had showcases.
He had showcases.
And it's just a regular hotel room?
Yeah. Yeah.
And where do you perform? In the corner?
In the corner. Usually they'll like tear the bed out. Well, not forcibly.
Move the bed out.
They put it in the bathroom, so there's a lot of space. They'll set up some chairs, like a little bowl of goldfish, and not all the rooms get PAs. Only corner rooms can have amplification, because if you had amplification in the middle of the hallway, it would go everywhere.
Right. So it's just people like playing, and the doors are open.
Doors are usually closed. Unless they're in the middle of a lot of places leave their doors open. So people, when you're walking by, you can kind of peek in and see, you know, who's playing at the time. And you might be like, oh, that sounds cool, I'll check it out. Or you move on. So it's a lot of just kind of like window shopping, you know, music. And everybody has their own poster and it says, oh, this is our room. And they usually have like a cute little like name. Like I think Shub is doing a room this year,
like capo.
I sent them an email because I was like, hey, I'd really love to play in your room. I've used your capos for years. Like, I'm not endorsed by y'all yet, but you know, maybe. What up? and they're calling it the Capo Cabana, so it's so they're probably gonna have some like
that's pretty funny.
They're probably gonna have some like, you know, bamboo up and like a little because I don't know. Cabana theme tiki torches.
Pina coladas
probably. Yeah maybe. So yeah, everybody has a little cute thing going on. And but there's also, you know, like Jenny Finley and her promotion company, like all the artists that she represents, like Like she goes.
Who is that?
Jenny Finley is Kent Finley's daughter. But she represents like Owen Temple and like Adam Carroll. I think it's called Catfish. I'm probably saying the wrong thing. Sorry, Jenny.
I think I'm friends with her on Facebook.
Yeah.
I know that name.
So like all these people, like it's all like sort of people like that are in, yeah, like industry people or music fans too.
Okay.
Yeah.
When you go there, what's the goal?
To win.
Well, you know, at South by Southwest, like when you go and play South by Southwest, a lot of times you're like, oh, you know, I've got this, I've got that, but I need a manager. I need a, you know, a booking agent. I'm trying to play for some press people.
I know a lot of people that do go there and they play it really well and they get gigs for the year. They do. Like they either get like on these small festivals or they can, you know, meet somebody that books, you know, like a string of shows in Canada or
house concert people
and house concert people. Like there's like a whole house concert circuit that they can
do that?
Figure out. I would love to do more. I do only like one or two and I haven't done them in years, but I really liked it. I really love those, but I just haven't really reached out to anybody or looked for it lately. I think it's easy to get kind of like wrapped into that thing when you end up start of only doing house shows
and then you're like, wait a minute,
am I in the club anymore? Like what's going on?
Right.
Yeah. I don't want to get wrapped into it, but I would love to do it more.
I did a couple house shows and they were both just real fucking weird.
They can be weird because like it's somebody else's house and you're like a stranger in it, but everybody wants to be really welcoming.
Yeah.
And then there's also people that you just don't know.
One of them was like a teenager one. Like ooh, it was a teenage girl.
Wow, that's kind of cool.
And teenage people. It was kind of cool, but it wasn't like I was...
Like that's not something you expect teenage girl to do.
You know, man, I got to be honest. I don't know if it was like the parents' choice.
Oh yeah.
Or the kid's choice.
I would like to think that it was her choice. But it could be. It could
something
be all...
makes me think it wasn't. They were like, oh, we got to have... And then it's like a special event is not a dude with an acoustic guitar at a teenager party.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Where obviously her parents are there, so no one's drinking yet, or they're having to sneak around and do all that shit.
For sure.
But like,
which there probably were.
Probably.
For sure. I mean, that's what I was doing.
yeah. Okay, so Folk Alliance... So when people come, people are trying to make connections with house concert people and with
some people do. I'm, you know, like we were talking about earlier, like the whole, you know, kind of approaching
right.
you or people approaching
right.
other people.
Right.
Like I don't put myself out there that way.
Right.
I'm not about to be like, oh, I really want to do this thing. You know, it's like, if you want to talk to me about it, that's cool. I probably won't say anything because I don't want to bother you.
Right.
So there are people that are just better at that. You know, they're very personable. They can reach out to people and say, hey, this is who I am. And I would like to come on and do this stuff. But I'm not good at that.
Yeah.
But for me, it's just like a lot of fellowship, I think, you know, cause you do get to see people that you don't get to see very often. And even though you might live in the same town, like a lot of the people from Austin, I don't get to see them very often because they're playing or I'm somewhere and I consider them my friends. But then now all of a sudden we're like all in the same place. So there's like this little kind of like Texas contingent and there's like this Oklahoma contingent and like these Canadians and then, you know, people from Australia and like everybody's sort of like just getting to know one another. And that's what is really meaningful to me about it all. I mean, it is sort of like taking music out of the honky-tonk and putting it into a very sterile environment, which bothers me, but there is a lot of like, you know, backslapping and just handshakes and saying, I love you and your music, and it really means a lot to me, and that's cool.
That's cool.
I think that's
yeah, really I mean, nice. That kind of stuff is important. I just didn't know how industry it was or if it was people kind of like connecting to each other.
It can be very, I mean, if you want to play it that way, it can be that way. But I don't think it has to be.
So let's go back to Sherman.
Oh, yeah, Sherman.
You played there. You tell me about the thing that you were talking about yesterday about the three nights of Bob Schneider that you went to.
Oh, yeah, so like Sherman, freshman year. I was just hanging out with some friends of mine, and we were kind of like thinking, I was like, oh, what do we want to do tonight? Like, nobody really has anything to do tomorrow. It was sort of near the end of the semester or something, so everybody was kind of like, you know, their work was all done. And I was like, well, Bob Schneider's playing at Poor David's Pub in Dallas. Let's go. I got my buddy Barrett Black to go with me, and we like went there, and I saw Matt the Electrician open, and then I saw Bob, and that show like changed my life. And then like the next night, everybody was hanging out. It was a couple more of us, and then, you know, that show, Poor David's Pub, like it was just Matt on guitar and then Bob solo.
Right.
I had been seeing Bob like play at Green Hall with the full band, and I'd seen the Scabs a couple times. So that was like honestly one of the first times I ever saw him solo, which was like, wow, you know, this really works well if you do it well.
Yeah.
You know, because I was sort of like, what am I doing? Like, I'm not getting really a reaction from people like doing the solo thing, but seeing that really kind of like reinvigorated my belief in the art form or whatever. Yeah. Of the like the solo singer songwriter dude on stage telling his stories and playing guitar. So yeah, I went to that show in Fort Worth. I can't remember where he played.
And the Aardvark?
Maybe the Aardvark. I don't think it was, though. It was probably the Aardvark. It was the Aardvark. And then the next night he played in Denton at like Dan's or something. Hmm. And we went to that show. And I was like in the front row every time. And I think I creeped him out. Because I did approach him after the Poor David's thing, and like I was like, hey man, I'd really love to open for you sometime, like I really love your music, like here's a CD. And he told me to call his girl or whatever that was doing, and I did send her an email, but I never got anything back, so it made sense.
What
though.
Year was that?
2005 or 6.
That was my girlfriend at the time.
No joke.
Sandy.
It was Sandy. I think it was Sandy. Yeah. Oh wow. Huh.
Those are our dogs. We're still great friends.
That's good.
I talked to her today.
Greyhound and
a Doberman.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sweeties.
Okay, so you finished school and you didn't want to stay in Dallas. You wanted to come back here?
I came back home and I tried to get jobs because I was like, oh, you got to get a job now. No dice.
What kind of jobs were you trying to get?
I was a swim coach for a while for my swim team that I did, my club team that I did during the summer. I was a swim coach for a while. And then I like tried to get some like weird kind of like either subbing positions or restaurants that it became pretty apparent that I was unemployable really fast. Because I do have such a spotty work history. And a lot of what I did in college was just gigging. And, like, that's how I made some cash to be able to, you know, spend. And so everybody's like, what do you do? And I was like, well, I play music. And they're like, forget it. Yeah, and I came home. And even the places that I knew that I had gigs at before weren't calling me back for some reason. I don't know what I did to make somebody mad or whatever. But I just ended up busking like in Green every afternoon. Like I could use, if you could get there at like 4:30 or 5, you're usually there.
Oh yeah, because there's tourists. Yeah,
and there's also just people that like to go there.
Yeah.
And so if you get there by 4:30 or 5, you could start playing, and then everybody that's going to dinner sees you, and as long as you're still there when they come back, they'll have some like loose change in their pocket. So like you could play. I played from like 5 to 9 pretty much every.
One thing about it just makes you fucking great.
It was just like going and playing every song I knew.
Yeah.
For 4 hours.
Yeah. But it makes you great.
It was a lot of fun. I mean, it's a different way of singing and playing because you're just trying to project. I don't really do that anymore because it's microphones. But I'm glad that I do have that. Because Folk Alliance, like, that's, like, sort of a place. Because there's no amplification. Like, you're in this room. Maybe it's kind of loud. Maybe there are a lot of people in the room. You do have to be, like...
Don't they have to be quiet?
Well, yeah. But, I mean, it's just a hotel room. It's not really, like, acoustically treated.
Right.
And And then in late night, like, it's just so loud because everybody's in the hallway and they're just, you know, running around.
Is there a lot of partying going on between the people?
Oh, yeah. Tons. Tons. I'm partying too.
When did you decide to do like the kinfolk?
That was sort of.
Or is that just something that you gave a moniker to when you have a band? That's what it's called.
That's what I call it. Yeah, okay. I mean, I had this band called Jonathan with this guy named Jonathan, and it was me and him and sometimes our bass player, but he eventually kind of like distanced himself from the whole thing.
Do you know Billy Harvey, by the way?
I do.
The way that you just said and what you said. I have this band, Jonathan, with this guy called Jonathan. Even just your delivery sounded exactly like something he would say.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah.
Yeah, I love Billy.
Yeah, me too. Nobody makes me laugh like that.
Yeah, and I just finally kind of figured it. I was like, well, I don't want to call it Jonathan anymore. And I was sort of like taking the reins like as like supreme dictator of the band. Because there was a lot of like back and forth between like which direction we wanted to go, and Jonathan was getting sort of upset with like the straight folk, like djembe stuff. Like he wanted to play drum set, and I was still sort of like, no, I really want to kind of keep it this way, you know, because I'm an artist, whatever. And so I was like looking for band names, and I knew that always, you know, the way like I guess. The world was going, and it probably has been this way the whole time, that like bands don't really exist anymore. I mean, they do, because there are some great bands, but like I wasn't getting steady people, and I knew I wasn't gonna, because everybody was gonna, I could call somebody and be like, hey, can you play on Friday, and they're like, oh no, I'm playing with somebody else. So I just wanted to call it something sort of a like the kinfolk, you know, it was just like a family type deal.
Yeah.
But it could be the kinfolk every time, just with whoever it is. And,
right.
And even those people, you know, it's a different show every time, depending on who's playing. Because the songs just take a different shape and, like, they're give and take. Like, it's a lot of fun.
Is that, even though you're the author of the song, when you put a band together, do you get the people together? How do I phrase this? You know, I was reading this thing about Bowie since he died. Like, oh, you know, he never really gave a lot of harsh direction, and he wasn't like a massive taskmaster making you do something in the studio, because he would get people because he liked the way that they played, and he wanted them to come do their thing on his jam. Like, here are the chords. This is what I'm doing. What do you do? Go.
That's exactly it.
That's a cool way to do that, man.
It's fun. I mean, and I'm not like a tax master, taskmaster in that way. I do really encourage the people that I play with. Like, I mean, there are ideas that I have. Like, yeah, I can be pretty heavy-handed, like on the way the groove is.
Sure.
Like the drummer more so. Like I'm like.
Well,
you know,
you also get people because you know their taste and that they're playing for your song, not for themselves.
Right. Yeah.
So, you know, that.
Yeah. So I pretty much do let, you know, whoever is in there, like, do their thing, and they change it in that way. And it's pretty radical.
But no one comes in and goes like, we're doing this in 7.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No. Yeah. Nobody. Yeah. Nobody does that.
Good.
But, yeah, no, it's a lot of fun. I really dig the band. Kind of a, yeah.
Yeah. And so these shows, what shows do you have coming up? Do I have anything written down?
I don't know. Probably February 27th, I'm playing the Saxon again. It's a Sunday.
Okay.
After the Resentments. It's February 27th, 2016. I think I might do like the Buzzmill next Tuesday.
Oh, really?
Oh, I'm playing next Tuesday.
I don't know if this will be out.
No, I can't do next. No. That. I can't do Buzzman next Tuesday because I'm playing. The Kinfolk are playing. Are opening for Allie at at the Stigold.
That'll be great.
It'll be a lot of fun.
Tonight you're playing with Emily Bell.
Emily Bell.
How did you get with those guys?
I know John.
Yeah.
Evans.
How do you know John?
Through New Braunfels, just kind of being at the shows. Because he plays the honky tonks down there, and at Riley's, like, I've just gone to shows
on his own,
with his band, you know, yeah. And I know Morgan Thompson, his old bass player, and Mark Haney played with him. And so I knew him through that. Like, Morgan used to play bass in the band. Sorry, Morgan, I took your gig. Sort of. Not really. He plays with John. But I know this guy named Anthony Pummel, who plays drums with him. We went to high school together. And my buddy Rory, who's in Bird Dog, we went to high school together. He's a great writer, too. He was like, I think I'm going to start playing guitar for Emily Bell. I was like, well, do y'all need a bass player? And he was like, yeah, I think we do. And so we just started having rehearsals, and now they're stuck with me for a month.
Is it going good?
It's going really good.
What do you mean they're stuck with you? Wait, are you in the pictures?
We were trying to take some pictures, but we usually end up forgetting. I think one of like the first rehearsals like that we had, she was like, oh yeah, guys, we got to just take like an iPhone photo of us so we can like use. And we were like, okay, yeah, cool. But we're like guys. So we just kind of avoided the subject for the rest of the evening. Not really. It wasn't like that concerted of an effort to like not take a picture, but we just forgot about it.
We need to get a good photo. You guys are playing tonight, right?
Tonight, yeah. February 2nd.
The day that we're talking, yeah.
Yeah, it'll be the first one. She's starting like a bi-weekly residency. It was going to be really funny because I was going to play with Allie. So I was going to be at Stagold every Tuesday for like 2 months. I was really stoked.
You like that place, huh?
I do. I really do. I go there a lot. I go there really early when there's nobody there. And I write a lot.
Oh, really?
And have some drinks. Yeah, just, you know, working on some poems. So
Is that on First?
It's on Cesar. East Cesar. Yeah.
I call that First.
Oh, it is? Yeah. Dang it.
I mean, in the numbers.
That's old Austin, I bet, that I don't know about.
Yeah. I don't know. East First. Cesar Chavez is right. I should be calling it that because it'd be dick of me not to.
No, I don't think so.
Is there any, you're thinking about putting out another album this year?
I would really like to, maybe. I mean, it'll probably come out next year because it'll take me so long to get everything together. I think we're going to do a song with George Reef.
Right. And put that out as a single?
I'll probably put it out as a single. Like, this is what I've been working on. This is what the record could sound like. And then maybe parlay that into either driving some sales of the old record that nobody's heard before. And
wait,
use that
an offering? No one's heard that?
That's
a great record. That's the one I listen to.
Cool. I like it a lot.
Yeah, me too, man. That is a really great record. Also great artwork by Little Brave.
Stephanie Macias. Yeah, she's my sister. I'm really happy with what she got done. When we released it, we never released it. I just got it in the mail and I didn't say anything about it. Just started bringing it to shows, and I didn't ever have a release show.
Why not?
I don't know. I just didn't want to deal with it. And I'm also like constantly trying to sabotage myself.
Don't do that anymore.
It's a bummer.
You would benefit from doing that.
I know. I need to do it, but I'm just not good at that stuff. And that's why I need somebody to help me with that kind of part of my whole thing. But it's just tough to do. And so, yeah, I just never did any talking about it. I'm still trying to send it to the radio. I've stupidly dated it on the back, copyright 2013 or 14 or whatever. So I'm sure when I'm sending it to these radio stations, they're like, this is 3 years old. Get out of here.
Right.
But it's still sort of like a new record. I think the songs.
Did you bring me one?
They're in my car.
Okay.
But yeah, and, you know, so maybe, you know, use those sales to fund the next record or do like a crowdfunding thing.
Yeah.
Maybe. Those scare me.
What scares me about that is you owe all these people then.
Right.
I actually know a story about someone. I'm not going to say their name because I've already had like a couple of like run-ins with their anger.
Oh no.
But I do. I have a friend that worked on a record, and he was like, "Okay, they're doing this, and they're going to go to this studio, historic studio, you know, in the South, and the Kickstarter winners will get that." Well, they couldn't afford to take the band there, and put them up.
What do you mean? What? Oh,
the artist couldn't go to this place in the South. you know, like in Memphis, this historical studio to do this thing live with the audience of Kickstarter winners. So she ended up like coming here and just kind of doing it on the sly and then just like never
delivered on her thing.
Yeah, I don't know what happened.
Yeah, that's a big deal. I mean, it's scary. That's crazy.
There's a lot of records in danger of totally bottoming out.
Not working out. Yeah. And even like your best laid, and I think maybe that was also too, like, you know, our best laid plans for the life of the record just never became realized, I suppose, because we didn't want to start doing any talking about it and then not deliver on, you know, whatever hype we built up. Because I see I see that happen a lot. Because I mean, people are like, "Oh, we're doing a record," and then it takes a year, yeah. And then you kind of are like, "You're still." It's not as effective as where if you, you know, had a plan and could actually get it executed well.
Yeah.
I'm just not good at that stuff.
No. It's hard. It's hard to do it. It's really fucking hard to make records.
Yeah.
It's hard to get out there and
get it done. I think if we have like a solid track of like a new song that we can put it out and be like, "Hey, this is what we want to do."
Yeah, recording with someone like George is ideal, you know? I mean, mm-hmm. I think of him as like a guy that really, I mean, just from what I've seen his work, you know, I've known him for a long, long time. He's, his work is fucking great.
It
speaks for itself.
It is.
Yeah.
I really love all the Ray stuff he's done.
Yeah.
And Brandy's and Anne's record is really great. And
did you talk to her about me?
I haven't yet. Okay. I think she's going to crash at the house. Okay. So I'll talk to her pretty soon. I will. I should message her right now.
No.
Not right now, but.
I mean, you can right now.
Okay.
I mean, we're coming to the end.
Right
are
on.
You, yeah. Are you.
Oh, yeah.
Is there anything I'm missing?
I'm not sure.
We didn't have the exact same conversation, so that's good.
That is good.
It was a good conversation, though.
Yes. I think we were a little more focused this time. Yesterday, I think we just got along really well. We just ended up talking about stuff we wanted to talk about.
Yeah.
Which is still fun.
Yeah, you're funny.
It's still fun.
Make me laugh. is there anything? People can find you at thekimfolk.com. You're mm-hmm. on Bandcamp. You're on Facebook. You're on Twitter. You're tweeting around. Are you on Instagram?
Yeah, I have an Instagram handle called Cowboy Cold.
Oh, yeah. I followed you. Yeah, yeah. That's right.
It's the temperature of beer I like to drink my beer at.
What is Cowboy Cold?
It's like not in the fridge cold.
Okay.
It's pretty. It's maybe colder than lukewarm.
Okay.
Maybe a little cooler. But not fridgers or ice cold.
Right.
And some people don't like it, but I prefer it.
So what do you like? Cowboy Cold.
Cowboy Cold.
All right. Well, hey, thanks for doing the show, Daniel.
Man, thank you so much.
People should pick up your albums. And also, honestly, like an offering, it's a full-length album. Your other two are EPs. But that album's fantastic. People should pick it up.
Thank you.
If you can get a physical copy, do it. If not, it's available on Bandcamp. If you are not in Austin and can't get to see or around, you know, Central Texas and can't get around to see Daniel Thomas Phipps, you can find him at thekimfolk.com.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I need to be better about updating it, and I will, I promise.
Update it.
I promise.
Listen, keep him to his promise. If he does not update it, let him know.
All right, thank you.
Hey, thanks, buddy.
Thank you.
Yeah. Daniel Thomas Phipps, great dude. You can find him at thekimfolk.com. Pick up his music. He's great, man. And what a great sport, because we ended up hanging out after I deleted his podcast. And then he just came back the next day. No problem. No problem, orchestra. We ended up hanging out. I would consider us at this point friends. We have spent a couple of hours getting to know each other, and now we're buddies, all right? So here's to Daniel Thomas Phipps. Check him out at thekimfolk.com. Check him out. See him playing with Emily Bell. And the Talkbacks. He's a member of the Talkbacks. He's the bass player. So rock on, Daniel. Hey, while you're out there checking out Daniel Thomas Phipps, don't forget on iTunes, you can subscribe to this podcast. You can find it on most of the mediums where you find podcasts. Stitcher, on your iPhone podcast app. You know, places like that. Android apps. Find us at the Podbean website. And if you're interested in hearing older episodes with tons of people, people that we talked about, Emily Bell, Brandy Zidane, Allie Holder, Little Brave, all these people are in the archives of the podcast. So you go to the How Did I Get Here Podbean website, look on the right side, there's archives listed by month in the year. Every month, just go through there, check it out, all right? Thank you for listening. Let's hear some more music from Daniel Thomas Phipps and the Kinfolk. Let's get down.
Outside today, and this is what she sees: a fake tan, a new lease of day, the fire's burning cold. She lives off the spark. Afraid of the dark. She wondered, when does my life start? She's singing, oh. Outside today, this is what he sees: a dirty sidewalk, a dirty street, the fire's burning building. God's gift to the meek. But God never speaks. And he wondered, why am I so weak? Why am I so weak? The wheels have been turned.